And now, welcome to Who's Talking on WCHL with D.G. Martin. Interesting guests, enlightening conversation. And now, here's your host, D.G. Martin.
Welcome to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin. And I'm real excited because there's a new book about barbecue from barbecue expert John Shelton Reed, who's worldwide authority on Southern culture, a retired professor at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill, co-author with his wife of my favorite barbecue book, Holy Smoke, which is the definitive book on North Carolina barbecue. It's fantastic barbecue book. So I got excited. He's going to write another book about barbecue in the world, in the region. It's just more expansive book on barbecue.
In the world, which means Southern barbecue.
is there no barbecue outside the South? I mean, no barbecue to speak of outside the South.
Well, stuff that, called barbecue, but, this book, DG, is not going to be out for another couple of years.
I know. Now, let me just say, I'm going to let you talk in a minute, but, but there are authors whom I fail to persuade that coming in and visiting with friends in Chapel Hill about what's going on with their book is not counterproductive to the ultimate promotion of the book. I finally persuaded you that it's fun to talk about a book that's underway, and it's a real gift to those of us who love you and love your work to kind of be a part of it. So thank you for coming
in. Sweet. Well, thank you for having me. But, it actually does kind of free you up some because I can say things like, the world doesn't really need another barbecue book. I can say this now because I won't say that when the book's out. let me tell you about why this book is being written, because the world really, you might think, doesn't need another barbecue book. UNC Press has got a new series underway called Taste of the South. And it's a standard format, an essay with 40 or 50 recipes on sort of iconic Southern foods. So they're going to have one on buttermilk, one on cornbread, one on greens, like that. And obviously a series like this needs a book on barbecue. Whether the world needs another barbecue book or not.
Have any of those books come out
not yet?
Not yet. We'll look for cornbread, for buttermilk,
I forget which ones they're
biscuits,
doing first.
Biscuits, for greens, collard greens, or fried chicken or something.
Yeah. Matter of fact, you should get Elaine Meisner from UNC Press on, who's the editor of this series, to talk about the series because it's real interesting.
Well, if this program works, that's what we'll do.
Okay. All right. I'll try not to spoil it for her. But this book, also, I need to write a book about barbecue so I can take a tax deduction for the expensive cooker I just bought, which...
So you bought an expensive cooker theoretically to try out the recipes that'll be a part of your book. Just to enjoy life, and you're going to make
I bought it entirely to test the recipes for this book to make income.
In case any IRS agent is listening.
That's right. Anyway, there are 30 or 40 barbecue cookbooks out there, and I own most of them. So the question arises, how is this going to be different, if at all? And so I'm trying to make it different. I'm trying to write a book on sort of historical principles. So rather than having the best recipe I know for mustard-tinged coleslaw, I'm going to have a typical recipe from...
Like one from a church cookbook or something from the kitchen of some alleged barbecue aficionado.
Exactly. In fact, the mustard-inflected coleslaw recipe I've got is kind of a cross between what Bob Melton's down in Rocky Mount used to serve and what Wilbur's in Goldsboro serves today.
You got me interested. I'm sorry to interrupt you, but you got me interested because I love... I visited Bob Melton, not in his old location, but in the transitional location that didn't work. Mm-hmm. I like what he served me, and I, of course, like what Wilbur serves me down in Goldsboro. But if you asked me to describe the coleslaw, mm-hmm. I would just say it's good. But I wouldn't know what to tell you.
Well, you have to make a study of it, DG, as I have done. But, there are these little – one of the things I love about barbecue is there are these micro regions, and eastern North Carolina and Memphis – have in common that the coleslaws in those two places tend to have mustard in them. Sometimes, you know, it's really alarmingly yellow. Bob Melton's was that way. You could really taste it.
So it's just a regular sort of, not any fancy mustard, just sort of the regular off-the-shelf.
French's out of the bottle is what a lot of these folks use. The fancier ones may use dried mustard.
And is the mustard the base, or is it just a little flavoring to it?
It's just, for the most part, it's just a tinge.
and what would mayonnaise or vinegar, or what would be the main ingredient in the other than the cabbage?
Melton's was kind of, near as I can tell, 50-50 mayonnaise and mustard. You know, that's about as mustardy as coleslaw.
And then would they throw some other stuff in there?
There'd be some vinegar and often some celery seed.
And then some secret ingredient that would be.
The Skylight Inn in Aden. You know, they use, according to Pete Jones, they use some sort of salad dressing that has mustard in it. But it's not Durkee's, because I've tried Durkee's and it doesn't produce. You know, that's one of the many, many, many recipes that you ask for and people say, well, I can tell you, but I'd have to kill you. That's a cliche.
But you're not going to give us the Skylight recipe, a reconstruction of that, or the Bob Melton, or the Wilbur's recipe?
Not in this case. In some cases, I am. You know, I've got a something that purports to be a close approximation of the rib sauce at Dreamland in Tuscaloosa. And I'm using that because it's a typical Deep South rib sauce, but it's also from Dreamland, and there's a story about it that I get.
Well, let's get to that later.
Okay.
And maybe finish the slaw, or not only finish the slaw, because maybe we just do this program on the slaw and then come back. But the slaw. So I'm still not sure I understand what you do. Is this going to be the John Sheldon Reed recipe for the slaw blended to be illustrative of what?
What I'm giving you is kind of a typical Eastern North Carolina slaw, although it's not exactly like anybody's down there. But it's
evocative of the Eastern North Carolina
It would fit right in at any.
And so, all right. Well, now. Just to give us, since we're listening to you before the book comes out, tell us what that recipe is, or what you can. And
I've got it right here. Just have to find the slaw where we brunch.
But all right, we'll start with the cabbage. And what do you do with the cabbage? You chop it, or you grind it up into little tiny things?
Golden coleslaw.
Shred it, or grind, or chop it.
Got it. All right. Talk about Bob Melton and about. Leonard Heuberger in Memphis. They both started, incidentally, in 1922, started selling barbecue, and both of them had this.
And they started out selling slaw. Slaw's always often been an accompaniment.
To this day, most slaw recipes in Memphis and eastern North Carolina have some yellow mustard in it. For the dressing, a half cup of mayonnaise or whipped salad dressing. A lot of people use Miracle Whip. I prefer mayonnaise, but
what would be the difference in the outcome?
Whipped salad dressing usually sweeter and lighter.
So you're going to put mayonnaise in. You tell us when you get to the end whether there's any sugar in there or not. But
that's interesting because I tend to use Duke's mayonnaise, as many Southerners do, and oddly enough, it has no sugar in it. Typically, Southerners like sugar and things, but Duke's mayonnaise is...
All right, Duke's doesn't have any sugar, so you can put but you're going to use Duke's.
Yep, half cup of that. 5 tablespoons, which is a bit more than a quarter cup of mustard, so I'm not going 50-50, but there's enough mustard in there.
They'll know it's there, but it's not going to overwhelm.
Right, and then a quarter cup of sugar just to sweeten it up some.
Okay. And no vinegar?
3 tablespoons of white vinegar. Quarter teaspoon of celery seed, a pinch of dry mustard, and a pinch of salt.
And it seems like that's a very workable recipe.
Yeah, it's a basic recipe. It's a typical recipe. Nothing fancy. You know, I could fancy it up and put Vietnamese fish sauce in it or something, and I could devise a slaw recipe that I liked better. But I want to put one in that is illustrative of.
That's basic. Yep. Well, already I can feel that you're defending what you're doing there will be people who will read your book and read the recipe and say, well, I knew that.
Well, I'm also putting in recipes for things that I would never eat, you know, and I don't recommend them. But I've got a recipe in here for, I haven't tested it yet, and I may not test it. I may say I'm not going to test this one, for hog snoots, you know, which is a favorite dish in parts of Missouri around St. Louis.
It is, why does it qualify as barbecue?
Well, they barbecue it. I mean, it's everything but the squeal, you know. Hang on, let me find you the hog snoots recipe.
In Missouri or someplace, the typical, you did the history in North Carolina, and in North Carolina,
yeah,
they did use everything, so there must have been some people cooking hog snoots back then.
Well, eating a whole hog barbecue, they may be chopping up the snoot.
They might have just been in there, but yeah. In this place, that's a specialty.
Yes, and they don't chop it up. Let me read you the description I've got from a woman named Dottie Griffith, whose recipe I've taken. I'm with credit. But she says, a snoot is very fatty, about the size of a salad plate, and weighs in at about a pound. She describes the taste as, quote, an intriguing mix of grease, sweet, hot, acid, and tang, not altogether pleasant.
Well, I mean, you have to be.
The texture, she says, is something like that of a raw hide dog toy.
But I mean, the first thing my grandchildren would say if you're talking about a snout is they want it really clean, because they know what goes up in those snouts.
Yeah. Well, I say in the introduction, if you've got a problem with the idea of eating a hog's nostrils, you know, don't think too much about your next hot dog.
Well, I guess that's right, that all of it goes in. But now, if I went down to Cliff's Meat Market or the New Meat Market here and said, hey, I want a pig snout, because
they could get it for you.
They could see.
I haven't put them to the test yet, but I'm hoping they can get me a young goat, because I'm putting a goat recipe in there, and I've got to test it. You know, some mutton. I need some mutton. It's not easy to get, but you can get it.
We'll spread the word. Yeah. First, we need to take a break, though. We're visiting with John Sheldon Reed, and, of course, talking about barbecue in connection with his book that is scheduled to come out in 2014, a new book on barbecue, a recipe book. He and I'll be right back.
You're listening to Who's Talking on News Talk 1360 WCHL with your host, D.G. Martin. And now, once again, here's D.G.
Welcome back to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin, and I'm visiting with John Sheldon Reed, and I'm tempted during the break. I'll just say that we're going to do this later. We're going to trash Kansas City, but not right now.
Okay.
Because I'm sorry to just keep you focused on slaw. And that part of it is the reason that we were talking earlier, and you interrupted your wife's leisure by bringing in three recipes for coleslaw and wanted her to test them out. And so you told us about the sort of eastern North Carolina, which is like another region, like Memphis. Mm-hmm. In that it's mustard. Mustard is a big part of it. But you didn't even tell us. You never did tell me, even though I asked you about whether you chopped up that or shredded it or put it in the blender, or what do you do to get the cabbage ready to be made into slaw?
Well, you know, most places shred it, but some places chop it real fine. I don't particularly care for it.
You like it. You like it in little pieces, little tiny micro pieces.
I like shreds. I don't like it when it's chopped so fine. It's
but
like
you don't like it
like
when
a mush.
It's like you don't like it mushy. You like little long shreds of.
Tell you the truth, I like it like you buy it already packaged in the grocery store.
You know, we can't start your recipe that way.
Yeah, I don't mean the stuff in tubs. I mean the stuff in bags. You know,
thinly chopped or shredded. Thickly shredded, but not pounded into a mush.
Yeah, that's
right. Well, now there is, even with the shredded. Now this is my problem with slaw, and that is that it you put that. Whatever your sauce or your what do you call it? You call it barbecue
dressing, yeah.
And then you put it in the refrigerator, and then there's a liquidization that takes place. And how do you?
Well, opinions differ. You know, some people say
you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah,
it just gets there's too much liquid in there, and where does it come from, and what do you do about it?
Well, it comes out of the cabbage, you know. But some people say you should put your dressing on and let it sit overnight to cure, you know. And then certainly the texture does change, and it absorbs the dressing. And, you know, if the dressing's not thick to begin with, you may get this puddle in the bottom of your bowl.
Yeah. Well, so what do you do about that?
You have a paper towel, you know. You don't have to serve it, you know. But,
or you put it in and let it, just put it, a coffee filter or something, just let it drain.
You could do that. You know, I in my experience, you know, if you make the dressing thick enough
By putting a lot of mayonnaise, about what?
Yeah, you know, if it's liquid, you've probably got too much vinegar in it.
But the problem you mentioned is that a lot of that water's coming from the cabbage itself.
Yeah, it does somehow exude moisture, but you make allowance for that. And if you've just sort of coated the cabbage with in effect, a dressing that's consistency of mayonnaise. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't think it'll pool up in the bottom.
Okay. All right. Well, the two other kinds of cabbage, just real briefly, because you want to talk about
two other kinds of slaw.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Obviously there's a whole range, but I've got what most Americans think don't have traditions to the contrary, think of as coleslaw, which is the mayonnaise-based creamy slaw that you can buy in tubs at the grocery store.
Now, when you think about the difference in varieties of slaw, you're thinking about the sauce. Is that right?
Dressing,
The dressing.
Pretty much.
And not this thing that I've gotten all worked up about, which is
the texture.
How you deal with the cabbage. That doesn't.
Well, you know, that's, I forget, one of the three recipes, I could look it up, but one of them calls for finely chopped.
Well, tell about the difference in the.
Okay, I've got three recipes in here. One is this golden thing with a discernible amount of mustard. Another is just creamy coleslaw like people put on hot dogs, you know.
Yeah, is that just mayonnaise by itself?
And sometimes that. Pretty much mayonnaise and vinegar. Sometimes that's what you want. I mean,
in this one that we're talking about, the mayonnaise and vinegar and some little bit of sugar.
Yeah, some sugar.
Always a little bit of sugar.
Yeah, and some celery seed possibly. Mm-hmm. And you know, but I said in the write up, I said it's like, you know, Debbie Reynolds in the 1950 movie. It's you know, unthreatening, sweet.
Here's my recipe that if you use, you're just a jerk.
unasserted. You know, it won't upstage your barbecue. You know. And a lot of barbecue places, you know, serve slaw like this. I mean, it's basically a side dish in a supporting role, and you don't want it to be
the starch. It's a lead up.
It's a supporting role.
Yeah. All right. Then what's the third one?
The third one, North Carolinians know, and that's what they serve in Lexington and the Piedmont generally, and that's a vinegar based, no mayonnaise at all.
No mayonnaise at all. Vinegar and sugar essentially
vinegar,
is what
sugar,
it is
in some. Basically, what it is Piedmont style sauce.
It's the barbecue sauce that
used as a dressing. So
now they put a little bit of tomato or ketchup or anything in there.
No, well, a little bit of ketchup, yeah, uh-huh. but also pepper and you know. So in most places, slaw is a contrast to the barbecue and sort of a relief. In the Piedmont, by God, they pile it on. You know, it's another vehicle for delivering that sauce, that dip.
Well, I'm sorry because I told you we were going to talk about barbecue.
Here
and this is a barbecue
slaw.
Book, and I got you on. Maybe slaw is just so much easier than barbecue.
Well, I come back and we can talk for half an hour about boiled potatoes if you want.
Yeah, well, we'll do that. What about
pick and cake?
You covered North Carolina barbecue.
Yeah.
And you said North Carolina barbecue, even east or west, is distinct from other regions. Now that you're dealing with it, what about the other places that barbecue's
right.
cooked?
One reason I jumped on this project was I have eaten barbecue in places like Texas and Memphis and Tuscaloosa, and this gives me a chance to talk about this amazing variety of barbecue that we've got. There are these distinct regions, you know, four or five major ones, depending who you're talking to. There's North Carolina, or the Carolinas.
So we are in with South Carolina in a region. I thought we were pretty different from them.
that mustard stuff in South Carolina, is that's the kind of micro region within.
But basically the kinds of barbecue you find in many parts of South Carolina is akin to North Carolina barbecue.
Oh, very much so. Yeah. If you go to Hemingway, South Carolina, a place down there called Scott's Variety Store, the whole PD, what they cook, is basically Eastern North Carolina style. You know, you go to Spartanburg, Greenville area, you're getting Piedmont style.
Is that right?
You go down by Augusta, down by the Georgia border, you're getting Georgia style. So it's just
so in Columbia, around Columbia,
Columbia
is this where?
Strip down to Charleston.
Is where this South Carolina mustard-based barbecue is.
And, you know, it's basically, I've got a sauce story going on here. This is basically the what I call the mother sauce, which is Eastern North Carolina sauce, with mustard and sugar added. You know, a lot of mustard, but enough to make that school bus yellow color. But you know, just as Piedmont sauce is basically the Eastern sauce with a little more sugar and a touch of tomato. You know, it's only when you get over across the mountain, start getting this Kansas City style.
All right.
Stuff.
Well, now what? All right. So we could argue about it, but we'll accept the basic idea that there's a Carolinas region. What else is there in the country?
Okay. The major ones would be the Carolinas. Then Memphis, which is pretty much on its own. I mean, you get 50 miles out of Memphis, and they're not doing Memphis style.
All right. Is Memphis different from the Carolinas?
Okay. Let me say they're outposts of the Memphis style in Chicago and Detroit, where people took it.
You know. Mm-hmm.
But, well, they do pulled pork, and they do ribs. And they do them with a relatively thick red sauce.
Is it then that they're not cooking the whole pig, they're just cooking ribs and shoulders.
Yeah. Okay. And they're putting a sauce on it, if they put a sauce at all. I'll get to that in a minute. That is basically ketchup with stuff added to it. You know, in the Piedmont, you've got vinegar with some ketchup added. You get across the mountains, you get ketchup with stuff in it. And that's Kansas City. But
all right, now this is Memphis.
Memphis.
What?
Memphis.
Now, anything going on between North Carolina and Memphis? Or
hang on a moment.
Okay, yeah.
The really unique thing about Memphis are these days are what they call dry ribs, which are served with no sauce at all, but with a rub on them.
That sounds good.
The Rendezvous is the famous
place. We don't do that in North Carolina very much, do we?
No, we don't. You know, I do it in my backyard, but that's because I really like that. A guy named Charlie Virgos in the 40s started doing this at his restaurant, and he was Greek, so this is a Greek influenced rub. It's got stuff,
but
like stuff like oregano.
Still over wood and hard coals. Look,
yeah.
I tell you what, can we take a break and come back? We'll continue to talk about Memphis, visiting with John Sheldon Reed about his upcoming book on barbecue, a recipe book, and we'll learn more about how to cook barbecue after this short break.
You're listening to Who's Talking on News Talk 1360 WCHL with your host, D.G. Martin. And now, once again, here's D.G.
Welcome back to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin. My guest is John Sheldon Reed. We're talking about barbecue, and I made him take a break. We're in Memphis, and he's telling me how Memphis is different from other regions, including the Carolinas region.
Yeah. I began by saying there are four or maybe five major regions, and then a whole bunch of micro regions, I call them. But Memphis is one. Texas is another. Texas is its own story. They're cooking all kinds of things in Texas. People say, you know, it's beef country, and it is. They do brisket and beef ribs, but they're also doing pork and goat and Lord knows what else. Texans, I have a great deal of respect for. I think we can learn from Texans. Two things. First of all, they respect the meat. They don't put gloop on it like they do in Kansas City. You know, many Texas barbecue places serve no sauce at all. They just cook the meat and put it out there. Also, Texans, you know, real wood-cooked North Carolina barbecue, I think is an endangered species, but not Texas barbecue. It's part of being a Texan as you go out and eat barbecue, you know.
And so they're devoted to wood-cooked. I mean, they're more like you in the sense that if it's not cooked over wood coals, it ain't coming close to qualifying for being barbecue.
That's my view, and that view is much more common in Texas.
Much shared in Texas, even though they're cooking now in North Carolina. if you're not cooking pork, it's hard for somebody to get the idea that it might be barbecue. But in Texas, there are a wide variety of different kinds of meats.
And you know, Central Texas, when people talk about Texas barbecue, what they're really thinking of is Central Texas around Austin. And they've got a German and Czech tradition there that came out of the meat markets. And they do respect the meat, and they put it up front and center. Now, Kansas City, which is, we mentioned Carolinas, Memphis, Texas. Kansas City, which is the fourth major region, that's all about sauce. Kansas Cityans came late to the party. They didn't really have barbecue places to speak of before the 20th century.
Now, why would that be? I mean, Kansas, I mean, it's a big cattle center. It looks like there would be a tradition of cooking meat.
Yeah.
But it's commercial. It's commercial rather than...
Well, what you get is a migration of black folks from the Deep South to Kansas City in the late 19th, early 20th century, and they started cooking barbecue. And actually, the best-known Kansas City place, which is Arthur Bryant's, doesn't cook Kansas City-style barbecue. that's another story. But a place called Gates Barbecue, the crosstown rival, they're the ones that started using this really thick, sweet sauce. If you go to the grocery store and buy something called barbecue sauce, it's likely to be a Kansas City style sauce, even if it's not called KC Masterpiece, which it may be.
Is it? They're, I understand they're not wedded to pork like we are.
No, they'll cook anything. You know,
in Kansas City.
Yeah. But whatever they cook, they put this sauce on it, so it really doesn't matter what they cook because you can't taste it. I mean,
so you get meat and then pour thick sauce on it so that it could be a bad quality meat. You don't know how it still might be
Kansas City sauce. Here I am trash talking Kansas City.
Yeah, you are. I think you've been waiting to do that.
I told you I was going to get to this. You know, you put this stuff on it's like frosting on the meat, and you can't really taste what's underneath. I heard the current owner, the second generation, I think, of Gates Barbecue on the radio the other day. He said, our sauce tastes good on broccoli. Well, hell, it tastes good on cardboard. You know, you can put it on anything, and it tastes like itself. You know, and you can't.
So in Kansas City, in terms of when they're competing and leading competition, it is a competition for sauce?
Don't get me started. Competition barbecue has become a big thing, you know, and I was actually at one down in Rocky Mount last summer. You get teams, you know, guys that go out every weekend and cook competitive barbecue. And the folks that organize this at the Kansas City Barbecue Society, and they tell you what to cook and how to cook it. I mean, and so here in Rocky Mount, they were not cooking whole hogs, which is what Eastern Carolinians do. They were cooking shoulders, ribs, chicken, and brisket. And you had to cook all four, right? And Kansas City style, I mean, you can, if you insist, put a vinegar-based sauce on it, but you won't win. You know?
Now you're deeply offended by the, and unapologetically offended by the Kansas City growing dominance of the barbecue world.
Just because they're imperialistic, you know. If what happened in Kansas City stayed in Kansas City, I would applaud it, you know.
Talking about cooking, if they're cooking several different items and one of them is pork, and are they requiring people to cook differently than what the North Carolina tradition would say would be the best way to cook
barbecue? They don't require you to cook it, but if you want to win, you cook it their way.
And what would be their way different from our way?
Well, the cooking itself is actually, I don't object to the way they cook it. You know, they cook it typically with indirect heat.
In North Carolina,
usually it's directly over the coals, but I don't have a problem with that. They cook it with charcoal and wood chunks added for flavor. That's all right with me. That's an acceptable compromise in my view. Your real hardcore people say, no, it's got to be over. You got to burn your wood down to get the coals. Anyway, but then when they serve it, they will serve it with this sauce, which, to my mind, disguises the flavor of the meat. You've gone to all this work.
If you're judging and you've got this sauce poured all over the meat, how do you judge the taste of the meat?
I've seen the criteria, and you know the taste is one of many criteria. They judge it on appearance. You know, they judge it on texture. You know, you can overcook it, undercook it. They judge it on taste, but the taste is largely determined by the sauce you put on it. You can over smoke it, so or under, you know. Anyway, the thing that annoys me is I just heard the other day the Kansas City Barbecue Society is holding judging classes, you know, for their competitions in Lexington, North Carolina, which, you know, Lord knows has it.
So this is, I mean, this sounds like churches splitting up. And,
well, DG, it's exactly like churches. You know, it's, no, we call our book Holy Smoke.
I guess it's it sounds like churches, but in your own church, you know you're right, when these other heretics come in and challenge your dominance.
You got these little sects too and cults here. One of the things I love about it are these micro regions. There's this around Decatur, Alabama, North Alabama, thanks to one guy named Big Bob Gibson, his restaurant started serving their chicken with this mayonnaise-based sauce. They cook the chicken and then they dunk it in vats of this this white sauce, mm-hmm. and it's amazingly good. That caught on and spread in North Alabama. So you know, other places down there now where they're putting that same sauce on ribs, you know, they get carried away. But just North Alabama. I mean, you can get it at places outside, but it's presented as an Alabama sauce.
Well,
which is, if they call this thick red stuff Kansas City sauce, and that would be okay with me. But they don't call it that. They call it barbecue sauce. You know, that's what it is.
And that's the offensive. Well, we'd have to brand our sauces, I guess, with North Carolina barbecue sauce. We've got to develop we think we developed a reputation throughout the country as having.
The irony is, DG, that Eastern North Carolina sauce is what everybody was doing in the 19th century. That's why I call it the mother sauce. The other things have evolved from that. But
maybe that'd be a good brand name, the mother sauce. This, my buddy Fountain Odom's business, or his family's business, comes from the mother vine, Scuppernong vine,
yes.
And it's a good brand. It's a good branding device. But golly, we run to the break again. Visiting with John Sheldon Reed, we're talking about things that come out of what he's learned as he is writing, as he works on brand new barbecue book, a combination of more learning from him and a few recipes. He and I'll be right back.
You're listening to Who's Talking on News Talk 1360 WCHL with your host, D.G. Martin. And now, once again, here's D.G.
Welcome back to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin. John Sheldon Reed's my guest. We're talking about the book that he's writing as we speak about barbecue throughout the South and West is barbecue. And we've talked about some of the regions, the Carolinas, the Memphis brand, the Kansas City, the Texas. And what have we left off?
Well, I said there were four or five regions, depending who's counting. The fifth one is Central and Western Kentucky, where they cook what we cook, pork. Sometimes they also cook brisket. That's not a new thing, but they're unique because they still cook mutton. We used to cook mutton in North Carolina. As late as the 20s and 30s, you could find barbecue places in North Carolina advertising mutton, but no more.
No more.
No. But in Kentucky, that part of Kentucky, they still do.
Let me just to put this in perspective. I love lamb, mm-hmm. Leg of lamb or lamb chops, or you know, these are great, tasty meats. Why did we get out of the barbecue? Is it just that the pig is just such a easy, cheap, thing to raise in the backyard, or what's the deal?
Well, it's you know, we got more pigs, hogs than people in North Carolina.
Right.
We don't have so many sheep, you know. In fact, I wouldn't know where to go to
buy. But you're a free market person. If we demanded sheep, farmers would grow them.
Well, we used to have them. We just don't. In that part of Kentucky, they're still raising a lot of sheep, although these days they tend to import it from the Midwest. But there's some connection I haven't worked out yet. The big source of mutton cooking it, there are restaurants that serve it, although they're down, I read the other day, to 17 restaurants that still serve mutton in that part of Kentucky.
As a barbecue dish.
Yeah. But the big occasion for cooking mutton are parish picnics. That area has a lot of Catholics.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Our Lady of Lourdes parish picnic, they're cooking, you know, a ton and a half of mutton. For I don't know why it is that Catholics and mutton go together, but I'm going to try to figure this out.
Well, what you probably already have learned is that there must be some differences in the way that you cook the lamb or the sheep as opposed to the way you cook a pig.
Yeah, fewer than you might think. They tend to do it over pits, you know, the way people used to cook pigs. Mutton is drier than pigs. You have to be a little more careful not to let it dry out, but you know, you're mopping it while you cook it. Compared to lamb, I've had mutton barbecue. I had it in Owensboro one time at a place called the Moonlight, which is the big place there, and it's, as they say, got a whang to it. It's gamier than lamb. I like lamb a lot. I'm not so sure about mutton, but I think I could get used to it.
Well, I don't know the difference between lamb and mutton.
Well, I say it's just a stronger taste. It's kind of more.
Aren't they both come?
Excuse me, mutton. Lamb is like veal.
Like a young lamb is young. Yeah. Is a young sheep, and mutton is an older sheep.
Yes, it is. And you get the same distinction with goat. I mean, and down in Texas, they're cooking typically cabrito, which is a young goat. They can cook older goats, but you have to marinate the meat.
So as we get older, we get tougher and less.
Yeah.
The younger.
The distinction I think people would be familiar with is the distinction between veal and beef. You know,
yeah.
And it's a more delicate flavor.
So if we were cooking beef barbecue, that would be we wouldn't cook veal barbecue.
No,
I've
never run into
that. And then maybe it is that meat is better without having to go through the smoked process. It's just put it in the oven and bake it, and it comes out good enough.
Yeah, I think beef is more forgiving if you want to cook it with gas. I still don't approve of it. But beef ribs, for example, big deal in Texas. We don't run into beef ribs around here. If you do, people call them dinosaur bones, you know, because they're huge. But I think it's wrong to think of those as most North Carolinians do, I think, if they think of it at all, as, you know, bigger, tougher, cheaper than pork ribs. What it is basically is, you know, ribeye steak with a handle on it. You know, it's where the ribs come from is you cut out.
It could be pretty good.
But if you think of it as steak instead of as an alternative
steak with a bone, with a bigger bone,
something to hold on to.
Well, listen, we're almost out of time, and I've been grilling you about all these things that I'm real excited and curious about in terms of your new book. I don't know whether I can wait to 2014 for it, but back away from all these specific questions and think about the journey of researching and writing the book, and give us just a taste of some of your one or two of your memories of what happened on the journey, what you learned that was a surprise or an encounter you might have had with somebody special.
Well, I think the Texas thing is what surprised me. For years I've been trash talking Texans, you know, and saying, oh, they cook beef, you know, how good can it be? And actually can be darn good, and I like their attitude because they're.
The surprising thing is your conversion, maybe not to the Church of Texas, but to a great respect for the people in the Church of
in Texas. You know, I one of the things I like.
You don't want it here, but you want it over.
Actually, occasionally I do go to the Q Shack in Durham and have some here just because they do it pretty well. It's advertised as Texas barbecue. You know, it's not. What gets my goat, DG, is this kind of international house of barbecue thing that we got going on, where you've got, you know, all these different kinds of meats and an array of sauces, you know, and you mix and match, and there's no local.
You want a restaurant that does one thing good, even if it's Texas barbecue or Memphis barbecue Kansas City barbecue, if they'll identify it.
Truth in advertising, you know, and. You know, there is a kind. We have our own.
All right, now let me just press you. This is I asked you to do this, and you're doing it. But you're okay with Kansas City barbecue in North Carolina if they'll label it Kansas City barbecue? But are you going to go there and eat it?
Probably not. I'm not that crazy about sauce.
Okay, so that's off the chart. But with respect to every other barbecue region, would you
mutton? I've got to work up to that one, but you know, Memphis I like a lot, particularly dry ribs. Texas, I like a lot, and I like Texans' attitude about it. And they're, you know, they're unapologetic, and they're still mostly wood cookers.
But Memphis, you like. You, particularly if you go to Memphis, you like to have Memphis barbecue.
Yes, I do. In fact, I go a long way out of my way to eat some dry ribs from Memphis. You can get a facsimile of them here. Red Hot and Blue is a chain. And ordinarily I don't approve of chains, but they're doing Memphis style barbecue, including the dry ribs, and it's a reasonable facsimile of what you get in Memphis. And they're pretty, you know, if you read the fine print, they don't have Memphis in the name, but they're clear that this
they're,
is.
A, that it's a clear. Well, listen, this is just wonderful. You make us. Want the book, and I don't know whether I can wait till 2014 to talk to you about it some more, because I got lots of other questions about the slaw, about the other accompanying recipes that you're going to have in the book.
Oh, get me back. We'll talk about banh mi and char siu and Korean barbecue, and that's the last part of the book.
That's the deal. We want to thank John Sheldon Reed for coming and giving us a preview of his upcoming book on barbecue, a recipe book, and as usual, I hope that we'll have some explanatory material from him in the front about it, but it's not coming out till 2014. If you want it faster, call him or UNC Press. But in the meantime, thanks, John.
Thank you very much.
This is great.
Always a pleasure.
Thanks to you for listening. This is D.G. Martin, who's talking, and I'll be back here before you know it.